We are continuing chapter 28 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Harry spent the whole of the next day dreading what Snape was going to say if he found out how much farther into the Department of Mysteries he had penetrated during his last dream. With a surge of guilt, he realized he had not practiced occlumency once since the last lesson. There had been too much going on since Dumbledore had left. He was sure he would not have been able to empty his mind even if he had tried. He doubted, however, whether Snape would accept that excuse. He attempted a little last-minute practice during that day, but it was no good. Hermione kept asking him what was wrong whenever he felt silent, trying to rid himself of all thought and emotion, and after all, the best moments to empty his brain was not while teachers were firing review questions at the class. Resigned to the worst, he set off for Snape's office after dinner. Halfway across the entrance hall, however, Cho came hurrying up to him. "Over here," said Harry, glad of a reason to postpone his meeting with Snape, and beckoning her across the corner to the entrance hall, where giant hourglasses stood. Gryffindor's was now almost empty. "Are you okay? Umbridge hasn't been asking you about the DA, has she?" "Oh, no," said Cho hurriedly. "No, it was only... Well, I just wanted to say, Harry, I never dreamed Marietta would tell." "Yeah, well," said Harry moodily. He did feel Cho might have chosen her friends a bit more carefully. It was small consolation that the last he heard, Marietta was still in the hospital wing, and Madame Pomfrey had not been able to make the slightest improvement to her pimples. "She's a lovely person, really," said Cho. "She's made a mistake." Harry looked at her incredulously. "A lovely person who made a mistake? She sold us out, including you." "Well, we got away, didn't we?" said Cho pleadingly. "You know, her mom works for the ministry. It's really difficult for her." "Ron's dad works for the ministry, too," Harry said furiously. "In case you hadn't noticed, he hasn't gotten sneak written across his face." "That was a really horrible trick of Hermione Granger's," said Cho fiercely. "She should have told us she jinxed that list." "I think it's a brilliant idea," said Harry coldly. Cho flushed and her eyes grew brighter. "Oh yes, I forgot, of course, if it was darling Hermione's idea." "Don't start crying again," said Harry warningly.
"Oh god, so jerky."
"I know. Well, he wants to be a dick at this point, I think.
Yeah, I know.
"I wasn't going to," she shouted. "Yeah, well, good," he said. "I've got enough to cope with at the moment." "Go and cope with it then," she said furiously, turning on her heel and stalking off. Fuming, Harry descended the stairs to Snape's dungeon, and though he knew from experience how much easier it would be for Snape to penetrate his mind if he arrived angry and resentful, he succeeded in nothing but thinking of a few more good things he should have said to Cho about Marietta before reaching the door. "You're late, Potter," said Snape coldly as Harry closed the door behind him. Snape was standing with his back to Harry, removing, as usual, certain of his thoughts and placing them carefully in Dumbledore's pensive. He dropped the last silvery strand into the stone basin and turned to face Harry. "So," he said, "have you been practicing?" "You okay? Is it plugged in?"
"Yeah. It's like flashing, but it's...
Is it on? What should we
do?" "We'll just let it go for now."
"Okay. So," he said, "have you been practicing?" "Yes," Harry lied, carefully looking at one of the legs of Snape's desk. "Well, we'll soon find out, won't we?" said Snape smoothly. "Wand out, Potter." Harry then moved to his usual position, facing Snape with the desk between them. His heart was pumping fast with anger at Cho and anxiety about how much Snape was about to extract from his mind. "On the count of three, then," said Snape lazily. "One, two..." Snape's office door banged open, and Draco Malfoy sped in. "Professor Snape, sir. Oh, sorry." Malfoy was looking at Snape and Harry in some surprise. "It's all right, Draco," said Snape, lowering his wand. "Potter is here for some remedial potions." Harry had not seen Malfoy looking so gleeful since Umbridge had turned to inspect Hagrid. "I didn't know," he said, leering at Harry, who knew his face was burning. He would have given a great deal to be able to shout the truth at Malfoy, or even better, to hit him with a good curse. "Well, Draco, what is it?" asked Snape. "It's Professor Umbridge, sir. She needs your help," said Malfoy. They found Montague, sir. He's turned up jammed inside a toilet on the fourth floor. How did he get in there? Demanded Snape. I don't know, sir. He's a bit confused. Very well, Potter, said Snape. We shall resume this lesson tomorrow evening instead. He turned and swept from his office. Malfoy mouthed remedial potions at Harry behind Snape's back before following him. Seething, Harry replaced his wand inside his robes and made to leave the room. At least he had 24 more hours in which to practice. He knew he ought to feel grateful for the narrow escape, though it was hard that it came at the expense of Malfoy telling the whole school he needed remedial potions. He was at the office door when he saw it, a patch of silver light dancing on the doorframe.
Harry, don't do it.
He stopped, and then, looking at it, reminded him of something. He remembered it was a little like the dream, the lights he had seen in the dream last night, the lights in the second room he had walked into through his journey of the Department of Mysteries. He turned around. The light was coming from the pensive sitting on Snape's desk. The silver-white contents were ebbing and swirling within. Snape's thoughts, things he did not want Harry to see, if he had broken through Snape's defenses accidentally. Harry gazed at the pensive, curiosity welling inside him. What was it that Snape was so keen to hide from Harry? The silvery lights shivered on the floor, on the wall. Harry took two steps toward it, thinking hard. Could it possibly be information about the Department of Mysteries that Snape was determined to keep from him? Harry looked over his shoulder, his heart now pumping harder and faster than ever. How long would it take Snape to release Montague from the toilet? Would he come straight back to his office afterwards, or accompany Montague to the hospital wing? Surely the latter. Montague was captain of the Slytherin Quidditch team. Snape would want to make sure he was all right. Harry walked the remaining few feet to the pensive and stood over it, gazing into its depths. He hesitated, listening, and then pulled out his wand again. The office and the corridor beyond were completely silent. He gave the contents of the pensive a small prod with the end of his wand. The silvery stuff within began to swirl very fast. Harry leaned forward over it and saw it become transparent. He was once again looking down into a room, as though through a circular window in the ceiling. In fact, unless he was much mistaken, he was looking down upon the great hall. His breath seemed to be actually fogging the surface of Snape's thoughts. His brain seemed to be in limbo. It would be insane to do the thing he was so strongly tempted to do. He was trembling. Snape could be back at any moment. But Harry thought of Cho's anger and of Malfoy's jeering face, and a reckless daring seized him. He took a great gulp of breath and plunged his face into the surface of Snape's thoughts. At once the floor of the office lurched, tipping Harry headfirst into the pensive. He was falling through cold blackness, spinning furiously as he went, and then he was standing in the middle of the great hall, but the four house tables were gone. Instead, there was more than 100 smaller tables, all facing the same way, at each of which sat a student, head bent low, scribbling on a roll of parchment. The only sound was the scratching of quills and the occasional rustle as somebody adjusted their parchment. Sunshine was streaming through the high windows and the bent heads, in which shone chestnut and copper and gold in the bright light. Harry looked around carefully. Snape had to be here somewhere. This was his memory. And there he was, at a table right behind Harry. Harry stared. Snape the teenager had a stringy, pallid look about him, like a plant kept in the dark. His hair was lank and greasy and was flopping onto the table, his hooked nose barely half an inch from the surface of the parchment as he scribbled. He moved around behind Snape and read the heading on the examination paper. Defense against the Dark Arts, ordinary wizarding level. So Snape had to be 15 or 16, around Harry's age. His hand was flying across the parchment. He had written at least a foot more than his closest neighbors, and yet his writing was minuscule and cramped. 5 more minutes. The voice made Harry jump. Turning, he saw the top of Professor Flitwick's head moving between the desks a short distance away. Professor Flitwick walking past a boy with untidy black hair. Very untidy black hair. Harry moved so quickly that, had he been solid, he would have knocked desks flying aside. Instead, he seemed to slide dreamlike across aisles and up a third. The back of the black-haired boy's head drew nearer and nearer. He was straightening up now, putting down his quill, pulling a roll of parchment toward him so as to reread what he had written. Harry stopped in front of the desk and gazed down at his 15-year-old father. Excitement exploded in the pit of his stomach. It was as though he was looking at himself, but with deliberate mistakes. James's eyes were hazel, his nose was slightly longer than Harry's, and there was no scar on his forehead. They had the same thin face, same mouth, same eyebrows. James's hair stuck up at the back, exactly as Harry's did. His hands could have been Harry's, and Harry could tell that when James stood up, they would be within an inch of each other's heights. James yawned hugely and rumpled up his hair, making it even messier than it had been. Then, with a glance toward Professor Flitwick, he turned in his seat and grinned at a boy sitting four seats beside him. With another shock of excitement, Harry saw Sirius give James a thumbs up. Sirius was lounging in his chair at his ease, tilting it back on two legs. He was very good-looking. His dark hair fell into his eyes with a sort of casual elegance neither James's nor Harry's could ever have achieved. And a girl sitting beside him, behind him, was eyeing him hopefully, though he didn't seem to have noticed. And two seats along from this girl, Harry's stomach gave another pleasurable squirm, was Remus Lupin. He looked rather pale and peaky. Was the full moon approaching? And was absorbed in the exam. As he reread his answers and scratched his chin with the end of his quill, he frowned slightly. So that meant Wormtail had to be around here somewhere too, and sure enough, Harry spotted him within seconds. A small, mousy-haired boy with a pointed nose. Wormtail looked anxious. He was chewing his fingernails, staring down at his paper, scuffing the ground with his toes. Every now and then he glanced hopefully at his neighbor's paper. Harry stared at Wormtail for a moment, and then back at James, who was doodling on a bit of scrap parchment. He had drawn a snitch, and was now tracing the letters L-E. What did they stand for? "Quills down, please," squeaked Professor Flitwick. "That means you too, Stebbins. Please remain seated while I collect your parchments." Accio. More than 100 rolls of parchment zoomed in the air into Professor Flitwick's outstretched arms, knocking him backward off his feet. Several people laughed. A couple of students at the front desks got up, took hold of Professor Flitwick beneath the elbows, and lifted him onto his feet again. Thank you," panted Professor Flitwick. "Very well, everybody. You're free to go." Harry looked down at his father, who hastily crossed out the L-E he had been embellishing, jumped to his feet, stuffed his quill and the exam paper into his bag, which slung over his back, and stood waiting for Sirius to join him. Harry looked around and glimpsed Snape a short way away, moving between the tables toward the doors and the entrance hall, still absorbed in his own examination paper. Round-shouldered, yet angular, he walked in a twitchy manner that recalled a spider, his oily hair swinging about his face. A gang of chattering girls separated Snape from James and Sirius, and by planting himself in the middle of this group, Harry managed to keep Snape in sight, while straining his ears to catch the voices of James and his friends. "Do you like question 10, Mooney?" asked Sirius as they emerged into the entrance hall. "Loved it," said Lupin briskly. "Give 5 signs that identify a werewolf. Excellent question." "Do you think you managed to get all the signs?" said James in tones of mock concern. "Think I did," said Lupin seriously, as they joined the crowd thronging around the front doors, eager to get out into the sunlit grounds. 1, he's sitting on my chair. 2, he's wearing my clothes. 3, his name's Remus Lupin." Wormtail was the only one who didn't laugh. "I got the snout shape, the pupil of the eyes, and the tuft tail," he said anxiously, "but I couldn't think of what else." "How thick are you, Wormtail?" said James impatiently. "You run round with a werewolf once a month." "Keep your voice down," implored Lupin. Harry looked anxiously behind him again. Snape remained close by, still buried in his examination questions. And this was Snape's memory, and Harry was sure that if Snape chose to wander off in a direction different once outside the grounds, he, Harry, would not be able to follow James any farther. To his intense relief, however, when James and his 3 friends strode off down the lawn toward the lake, Snape followed, still poring over the paper, and apparently with no fixed idea of where he was going. By jogging a little ahead of him, Harry managed to maintain a close watch on James and the others. "Well, I thought the paper was a piece of cake," he heard Sirius say. "I'd be surprised if I don't get outstanding on it, at least." "Me too," said James. He put his hand in his pocket and took out the struggling golden snitch. Where'd you get that? Nicked it, said James casually. He started playing with the snitch, allowing it to fly as much a foot away, and seizing it again. His reflexes were excellent. Wormtail watched in awe. They stopped in the shade of the very same birch tree at the edge of the lake where Harry, Ron, and Hermione had spent a Sunday finishing their homework, and threw themselves down on the grass. Harry looked over his shoulder yet again, and saw to his delight that Snape had settled himself on the grass in the dense shadows of a clump of bushes. He was as deeply immersed in the owl paper as ever, which left Harry free to sit down on the grass between the beach and the bushes and watch the foursome under the tree. The sunlight was dazzling on the smooth surface of the lake, and on the bank, a group of laughing girls who had just left the great hall were sitting with shoes and socks off, cooling their feet in the water. Lupin had pulled out a book and was reading. Sirius stared around at the students milling over the grass, looking rather haughty and bored, but very handsomely so. James was still playing with the snitch, letting it zoom farther and farther away, almost escaping, but always grabbing it at the last second. Wormtail was watching him with his mouth open. Every time James made a particularly difficult catch, Wormtail gasped and applauded. After 5 minutes of this, Harry wondered why James didn't tell Wormtail to get a grip on himself, but James seemed to be enjoying the attention. Harry was sure his father had a habit of rumpling up his hair as though to make sure it did not get too tidy, and also that he kept looking over at the girls by the water's edge. "Put that away, will you?" said Sirius finally, as James made a final catch, and Wormtail let out a cheer. Before Wormtail wets himself from excitement. Mm-hmm. Wormtail turned slightly pink, but James grinned. "If it bothers you," he said, stuffing the snitch in his pocket. Harry had the distinct impression that Sirius was the only one for whom James would have stopped showing off. "I'm bored," said Sirius. "Wish it was the full moon." "You might," said Lupin darkly from behind his book. "We've still got Transfiguration. If you're bored, you can test me. Here," and he held out his book. Sirius snorted. "I don't need to look up that rubbish. I know it all." "This'll liven you up, Padfoot," said James quietly. "Look who it is." Sirius's head turned. He had become very still, like a dog that scented a rabbit. "Excellent," he said softly. "Snibbles." Harry turned to see what Snape was looking at. What Sirius was looking at. Snape was on his feet again, stowing his owl paper in his bag. As he emerged from the shadows of the bushes and set off across the grass, Sirius and James stood up. Lupin and Wormtail remained sitting. Lupin was still staring at his book, though his eyes were not moving and a faint frown line had appeared between his eyebrows. Wormtail was looking from Sirius to James to Snape, with a look of avid anticipation on his face. "All right, Snivellus," said James loudly. Snape reacted so fast, it was as though he'd been expecting an attack. Dropping his bag, he plunged his hands into the inside of his robes, and his wand was halfway in the air when James shouted, "Expelliarmus!" Snape's wand flew 12 feet in the air and fell with a little thud in the grass behind him. Sirius let out a bark of laughter. "Impedimenta," he said, pointing his wand at Snape, who was knocked off his feet halfway through a dive toward his own fallen wand. Students all around had turned to watch. Some of them had gotten to their feet and were edging nearer to watch. Others looked apprehensive, still others entertained. Snape lay panting on the ground. James and Sirius advanced on him, wands up, James glancing over his shoulder at the girls in the water's edge as he went. Wormtail was on his feet now, watching hungrily, edging around Lupin to get a clearer view. "How'd the exam go, Snivelly?" said James. "I was watching him. His nose was touching the parchment," said Sirius viciously. "There'll be great grease marks all over it. They won't be able to read a word." Several people watching laughed. Snape was clearly unpopular. Wormtail sniggered shrilly. Snape was trying to get up, but the jinx was still operating on him. He was struggling, as though bound by invisible ropes. "You wait," he panted, staring up at James with an expression of purest loathing. "You wait." "Wait for what?" said Sirius coolly. "What are you going to do, Snivelly? Wipe your nose on us?" Snape let out a stream of mixed swear words and hexes, but his wand being 10 feet away, nothing happened. "Wash out your mouth," said James coldly. "Scourgify." Pink soap bubbles streamed from Snape's mouth at once. The froth was covering his lips, making him gag, choking him. "Leave him alone." James and Sirius looked around. James's free hand jumped to his hair again. It was one of the girls from the lake edge. She had thick, dark red hair that fell to her shoulders and startlingly green, almond-shaped eyes. Harry's eyes.
Mm.
Harry's mother. Mm. All right, Evans, said James, and the tone of his voice was suddenly pleasant, deeper, more mature. Leave him alone, Lily repeated. She was looking at James with every sign of great dislike. What's he done to you? Well, said James, appearing to deliberate the point. It's more the fact that he exists, if you know what I mean. Many of the surrounding watchers laughed, Sirius and Wormtail included. But Lupin, apparently still intent on his book, didn't, and neither did Lily. You think you're funny, she said coldly, but you're just an arrogant, bullying toe-rag, Potter. Leave him alone. I will if you go out with me, Evans, said James quickly. Go on, go out with me, and I'll never lay a wand on old Snively again. Behind him, the impediment jinx was wearing off. Snape was beginning to inch toward his fallen wand, spitting out soap suds as he crawled. I wouldn't go out with you if it was a choice between you and the giant squid, said Lily. Bad luck, Prong, said Sirius briskly, turning back to Snape. Oi. But it was too late. Sirius had directed his wand straight at James. There was a flash of light. Snape had directed his wand straight at James. There was a flash of light, and a gash appeared on the side of James's face, spattering his robes with blood. James whirled about. A second flash of light later, Snape was hanging upside down in the air, his robes falling over his head to reveal skinny, pallid legs and a pair of graying underpants. Many people in the small crowd watched and cheered. Sirius, James, and Wormtail roared with laughter. Lily, whose furious expression had twitched for an instant as though she were going to smile, said, Let him down. Certainly, said James, and he jerked his wand upward. Snape fell into a crumpled heap on the ground. Disentangling himself from his robes, he got quickly to his feet, wand up. But Sirius said, Petrificus totalis. And Snape keeled over again at once, as rigid as a board. Leave him alone, shouted Lily. She had her own wand out now. James and Sirius eyed it warily. Ah, Evans, don't make me hex you, said James earnestly. Take the curse off him, then. James sighed deeply, and then turned to Snape and muttered the counter-curse. There you go, he said, as Snape struggled to his feet again. You're lucky Evans was here, Snivellus. And need help from filthy little mudbugs like her. Lily blinked. Fine, she said coolly. I won't bother in future. And I'd wash your pants if I were you, Snivellus. Apologize to Evans, James roared at Snape. His wand pointed threateningly at him. I don't want you to make him apologize, Lily shouted, rounding on James. You're as bad as he is. What? James yelped. I'd never call you a you-know-what. Messing up your hair because you think it looks cool to look like you just got off a broomstick, showing off with that stupid snitch, walking down corridors and hexing anyone who annoys you just because you can. I'm surprised your broomstick can get off the ground with your fat head on it. You make me sick. She turned on her heel and hurried away. Evans, James shouted after her. Hey, Evans. But she didn't look back. What is it with her? Said James, trying and failing to look as though this was a throwaway question of no real importance to him. Reading between the lines, I'd say she thinks you're a bit conceited, mate, said Sirius. Right, said James, looking furious. Right. There was another flash of light, and Snape was once again hanging upside in the air. Who wants to see me take off Snively's pants? But whether James really did take off Snape's pants, Harry never found out. A hand had closed tight over his upper arm, closed with a pincer-like grip. Wincing, Harry looked around to see who had hold of him, and he saw, with a thrill of horror, a fully grown, adult-sized Snape standing right beside him, white with rage. Having fun. Harry felt himself rising into the air. The summer's day evaporated around him. He was floating up through the icy blackness. Snape's hand still held tight on his upper arm. Then, with a swooping feeling as though he had turned head over heels in midair, his feet hit the stone floor of Snape's dungeon, and he was standing again, beside the pensive on Snape's desk in the shadowy present-day potions master's study. So, said Snape, gripping Harry's arm so tightly Harry was starting to feel numb. So, been enjoying yourself, Potter? No, said Harry, trying to free his arm. It was scary. Snape's lips were shaking. His face was white. His teeth were bared. "Amusing man, your father, wasn't he?" said Snape, shaking Harry so hard his glasses slipped down his nose. "I didn't..." Snape threw Harry from him with all his might. Harry fell hard onto the dungeon floor. "You will not tell anybody what you saw," Snape bellowed. "No," said Harry, getting to his feet, as far away from Snape as he could. "No, of course I..." "Get out, get out. I don't ever want to see you in this office again." As Harry hurried toward the door, a jar of dead cockroaches exploded over his head. He wrenched the door open and flew away up the corridor, stopping only when he had put 3 floors between himself and Snape. There he leaned against the tower, fell against the wall, panting, and rubbed his bruised arm. He had no desire to return to Gryffindor Tower so early, nor to tell Ron and Hermione what he had just seen. What was making Harry feel so horrified and unhappy was not being shouted at or having jars thrown at him. It was that he knew exactly how it felt to be humiliated in the middle of a circle of onlookers, knew exactly how Snape had felt as his father had taunted him, and judging from what he had just seen, his father had been every bit as arrogant as Snape had always told him.
Mm.
That's the end of chapter 28. Next we're in chapter 29 called Career Advice.
Make out break.
Good night, beautiful. Sleep well, kitten. Sweet dream.
Good night.
Good night, Carrie Boo. I love you.